The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Mean Workbook on Navigating Difficult Relationships is my best-selling product for a reason. It helps you pinpoint the specific, manipulative, controlling, and emotionally abusive behaviors that you may be experiencing and guide you to your next steps. Download it today over at loveandabuse.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani and I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always got to make that disclaimer just in case somebody takes me seriously. I am so glad you are here. Thank you for showing up. And I want to talk today about an email that I received regarding self-confidence. Self-confidence and feeling secure in yourself. Feeling like everything's okay. I mean, we talk about things that aren't okay. We talk about toxic relationships. We talk about people that are hard to get along with and failure of communication. But how often do we talk about things that we're good with? We're good with ourselves. Hey, I'm feeling good about myself. I feel alive. I feel strong. I feel energized. And when you feel that way, are others intimidated? Are others intimidated by your leadership of yourself? You showing up in a way that feels good to you. I had an experience when I was younger, when I was in my 20s, where I worked with this guy named Robert. And Robert would come into the office. I shared an office. So he came into our office, and he was always, always confident. No matter what you said to him, you could say, Robert, there's a fire down the way. There's a fire in the hall. We need to put it out. And he would say, all right, let's do it. And I just looked at him and thought, wow, this guy is so confident. He's calm. He feels very secure and he makes decisions fast. And it didn't intimidate me. It actually made me envious, not jealous, but it made me think that I really wanted to be like Robert. I wish I knew where Robert was today, because he's probably doing something and very successful at it. Because of everything I just said. I mean, that's not the only reason people become successful, but one of those reasons is quick decision making. When you become a quick decision maker, you usually get things done. And this is probably not news to some people, but probably is news to others, and probably intimidating to others still. Why is it intimidating? Because quick decision making means quick failure to some people. It also means quick success. It also means quick learning, quick experience, quick wisdom. It's as volatile as cryptocurrency. It could go anywhere. But that's a good thing. It's a real good thing, because you can basically have control for the whole decision-making process. Meaning, something happens, you have to make a decision, so you make a decision and you figure out, uh-oh, it's wrong. And now I have to deal with this. And then you deal with it, because that's another decision. It failed. I got to deal with it. And now this person's upset. So I'll deal with that too. I'll deal with this person. Hey, I'm sorry. It was not intentional. Now I'm dealing with the failure or mistake or whatever it is. And I'm fixing it. I'm doing the best I can to fix it. And then you move on to your next decision. And it's decision after decision after decision. And because you're doing all this, because you are not afraid to fall and get back up and do it again, except a little differently this time, you learn fast. You gain all those things, wisdom, experience, and also you're taking action steps to move forward. You're making progress. So it's all about forward momentum. Quick decision making is all about forward momentum. And that frightens the heck out of some people. It really makes them afraid, because forward momentum, if it's volatile, if it includes failure, they don't want to do it or don't want to risk it. And what I like to do when it comes to quick decision making, if I ever find myself hesitating, then I immediately go to the worst case scenario in my mind. Okay, if I make this decision, what could happen? Oh, gee, you know, I could lose this money. I could lose this friendship. I could lose this. I could lose this. And then I drill into that and I ask myself, what's so bad about that? If I lose money, that's pretty bad. Yeah, but what's so bad about that? Well, I might be a month or two behind in my mortgage, or maybe I'll go bankrupt. Oh, there we go. There's something worse. What's worse than that? What's worse than going bankrupt? And then I'll drill into that. And then I'll ask myself the same question. What's worse than that? And then I'll ask myself the question, how is that a problem? Why is that so bad? And I keep drilling into the problem or the fear until I get to the point where it's just so crazy, ridiculous, like I could die if I cash that check. It could be something so far-fetched, or the world could explode, even more far-fetched. The world could explode if I cash that check, or don't cash that check, or tell that person that they're disrespecting me and I don't like it. What is the worst case scenario? And you do have to do this incrementally. You can't just say, well, if I cash that check or I say that thing to that person, the world could explode. Don't just jump to the worst case scenario. Get there incrementally. Ask yourself, what's worse than that? What's worse than that? And then also ask yourself along the way, how is that a problem, or why is that so bad? And never answer, well, anyone would think it's bad, or anyone would think it's a problem, because now you're removing yourself from the equation. As soon as you remove yourself from the equation, it's no longer about you. And if it's not about you, you're not drilling down into your issues anymore. If you say, well, anyone would feel that way, or of course I'm going to feel that way, that doesn't answer the question. The question is, how is that a problem for you? How is that a problem in your life? Why is that an issue? Why is that so bad? And you can't just generalize it and say, because it's bad, or anyone would say it's bad. You have to answer why it's so bad. Just like when I did this with myself when I was going bankrupt. I did this many, many years ago. A bankruptcy was something I wanted to avoid at all costs. I'm a man of honor. I'm a man of integrity. I don't want to go bankrupt, because that's not the kind of person I am. And boy, that was scary as heck during the mortgage crisis. I lost my condo. I couldn't pay my bills. I lost my job. Everything was happening. I was married and we were going broke. This is right before we ended up at the soup kitchen. And I was so afraid of going bankrupt. But I knew if I stayed on course with what was happening, that I would just get deeper and deeper into financial debt or ruin or whatever. And I asked myself, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Oh, the worst thing that could happen, you know, I go bankrupt, I can't pay my rent, I can't provide for my family, I can't pay for gas, I can't go anywhere, I'm basically stuck at home if I even have a home left. What's worse than that? That's pretty bad. And then asking myself, well, how is that a problem? And what I'm posing here is when you ask that question, you can't just say, well, duh, it's a problem. Everyone would have a problem with that. Never make it easy on yourself. Never go easy. Don't make it easy on yourself and say, well, anyone would have a problem with that. Dive into the issues in your life. Make yourself drill down into your problem, your issue, the issue that you have, because when you generalize it and make it a bigger picture that anyone would have the problem, again, you take yourself out of the equation, which does not help with the healing and growing and learning and evolving into something greater than yourself, because you're still stuck in this wheelbarrow that you filled with everyone else's problems. Everyone would have a problem with that. Let's put everyone's problems in this wheelbarrow so that we all have to face them the same, and we can all agree that it would be a big issue in our life that was pretty much insurmountable except for a few lucky or chosen few, or people that know how to get out of this problem because they have the answers or whatever. We don't want to group ourselves with other people with the same problem. We want to make our problems personal so that we can deal with them, instead of just saying, oh crap, I'm bankrupt, or I'm going to be bankrupt, so I guess my life is over now and I'm going to be anxious for the rest of my life. Because as soon as we stop our thought process there, then wherever our feelings and emotions are at that point, we'll be there indefinitely. This is what is so useful about drilling into and drilling down into your challenges. When I was facing complete financial ruin, that's not really a good way to put it, because it wasn't like I was wealthy. It was just I didn't have enough money for all my bills and everything coming up, and I was behind on so many things that it just wasn't going to happen. I couldn't pay. So when I was facing the idea of bankruptcy, and also facing the inner struggle I had with bankruptcy, because I felt at the time filing for bankruptcy would be something that is out of integrity and out of character for me. Therefore, I felt like a con man or a liar or someone who steals. I felt like all these things. So I had to drill into this challenge I have, this inner struggle I have, and I asked myself, okay, what's so bad about bankruptcy? I have no money. What's so bad about having no money? Well, if I have no money, I can't pay my bills. What's so bad about not paying your bills? Why is that an issue? Why is that a problem? I kept doing that, and I also discovered during this process, which I'm hoping you can discover while you do this kind of thing, is the benefits of some of the decisions you'll make. And that's a good question for you as well. All right, well, how will I benefit from being bankrupt? My first go-to is, how will I benefit from being bankrupt? I mean, I'm about to show the world that I am a liar, that I'm a thief. I'm about to show the world. Yes, maybe that's true in your mind, but how will you benefit? Because there's a benefit for almost everything you do. And so I thought, okay, I got to walk through this process. How will I benefit from this? And one of the major thoughts that comes up for almost everyone is, I won't have any more bills to pay, or at least the ones I owe on. I won't have those bills. And I asked myself, well, how would you feel if you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have any of those bills to pay? I was suddenly anxiety free. At least in that moment, I was suddenly not panicking. It was the first time I felt good about being a man who was out of integrity. It was the first time. I mean, I was calling myself out of integrity. I don't believe I am that. But back then, that's what my fear was. I don't want to be this person that's out of integrity, but what is the benefit? And as soon as I realized that benefit, it made me feel a little bit better. But I would not have ever gotten to that point had I not gone to the worst case scenario and then asked myself how I'd benefit. And it's tough sometimes. I'm not going to say that every time you do this and then ask yourself how you'd benefit, that you're going to find great answers that resolve everything or turn everything around. but it is totally worth doing, because as you ask yourself, what's worse than that? What's worse than that? You get to a point where things are so bad or things are so ridiculous as you imagine this, that what was originally something that you were afraid of no longer has the same effect. What you were originally afraid of or had a fear about or insecurity about doesn't have the same amount of intensity, doesn't have the same amount of impact. It is a different variable altogether. You have a different perspective. You feel differently about it. And then suddenly, maybe it's not so insurmountable or impossible. Because we all know that things can get even worse than that, whatever that is. Things can get worse, absolutely. Even the worst thing in the world, there's something worse than that. Now, there are some things that you may not be able to get through. You know, you lose someone you love, what's worse than that? Nothing, because I lost that person and they'll never come back. Absolutely. There are things like that. And you'll need to go through the grieving process, and you'll need to experience that loss, and you'll need to refill that missing piece of you and that hole in your heart. There is a process to go through, and you will get through it. There are different things like that, but that's one of those sayings that we hear. What is it? This too shall pass? Absolutely. It will pass. It doesn't mean that you'll forget about it and move on. Sometimes you're going to remember it for the rest of your life. Sometimes whatever happened to you will be remembered, and the intensity will die down. It will decrease, but you may still feel not so good about it. But the impact does decrease, and you do move on. And this is why it's important to continue a forward momentum, to continue making decisions for your life, and continue moving in a forward direction. Because as you move forward and you make decisions for yourself, you start rebuilding your life, or building it in a way that moves probably faster than not making decisions for your life or making very slow decisions. And I'm not saying that every decision has to be fast. I'm just saying if you're one of those people that avoids decisions or is very slow at making decisions, it's not bad to be slow, but it might not benefit you to avoid making decisions, because that just keeps things the same. So if you like things the same, that's fine. If you want something different for your life, then make decisions, at least a little bit faster than zero. If you're not doing it at all, it's helpful to just make the decision, see what happens, move to the next decision, fix what you have to fix, or maybe you'll succeed wildly and you'll be a decision-making master. And as you do this more and more, this helps you build self-confidence. Wasn't necessarily going to talk about how to build self-confidence today, but I do want to emphasize the faster you make decisions, regardless if you know you're right or wrong, the faster you will learn and the faster your life will move. And you get better at it because you learn faster. And that's not always pleasant. They don't want to fail, and that's how they learn, but this is how you do it. There's nothing faster than that. There's nothing faster than failing, because all you do is make the next decision. Again, doesn't work with every single important decision. If you're splitting the atom, probably not best to make split-second decisions, no pun intended. And if you're working in a hospital, maybe it's good to make fast decisions sometimes. Maybe you need to think about it. You need to talk about it. You know what I'm saying. It's just the idea of making daily decisions, and what do you do? And that does, every time you make a new decision, it builds confidence in your ability to make decisions. It causes you to start trusting your decision-making process, even when your decisions are wrong, because you will know how to correct wrong decisions and prevent wrong decisions in the future. You get better and better at it, just like someone who rides a bike for the first time. They fall maybe a few times, and then they get better and better at it, and they realize it's probably not a good idea or a good decision to ride downhill as fast as possible with no helmet and then hit that curb as hard as you can. I did something similar. It wasn't a curb. It was a little jump when I was a kid. And I don't remember what happened. I blacked out in midair because I was so high in the air that I didn't know what to do. So I just, I think, shut my eyes. Then I landed like little boys do and somehow brushed myself off and never did that again. But what it does is it builds confidence. It builds emotional surety in yourself, because if you had fear before and you made the decision and you got through the challenge or whatever you were going through, then it is a reference for later. Hey, I got through this before. I'll do it again. Just like, hey, I've been bankrupt before. I've been in the soup kitchen before. No problem. If it happens again, I know I'll survive. Before I did it the first time, I didn't think I was going to survive. And I didn't know what life was like with no money. It just blew my mind when it happened, because I thought, this is it. It's over. I'll go hungry and I'll die. But I didn't, because I never considered life with no money. I know there are people listening right now saying, yeah, that's me. I don't have any money. But you are listening. Somehow you're hearing this. Doesn't mean that life is a breeze, but it does mean that you're still here. You're still getting through every day and you're figuring things out one step at a time. And if that's you, hopefully you'll get to a point where money is not so much a fear or concern, but sometimes it is. Some people go through week after week after week wondering where their money's coming from, but you are still here. And this is one of those worst case scenarios. What's worse than that? What's worse than that? Well, I could die. Well, you're not dead right now. I mean, if you're listening, you're not dead, which means you're still here. And that's great with me. If I'm alive, that's great. But that's my criteria. If I'm alive, if I'm still existing, then I'm doing something right. Maybe I have very low standards or something, but now I feel pretty darn good being alive. Of course I have stress. Of course there are struggles. There are always struggles for everyone in some way, shape, or form in some area of life. But that's why it's helpful to be a quick decision maker and develop confidence in yourself and be sure of yourself and move through life knowing you could make bad decisions, but continuing to make them anyway so that you can get things done. And coming right back to this person who wrote to me, I'm going to read the email in the next segment, but she sounds like a person that gets things done, that walks around very confident in herself. And she says that people are intimidated by that. Not everyone, but she says that people are intimidated. And she wants to know why that is and how else can she show up without compromising herself. I think that's a great question. And I'm going to read you that question when we come back. And hopefully I'll have a good answer. If I don't, I'm making the decision to address it anyway. And we'll see where we go. Thanks again. We'll be right back after this. I have two fun things to tell you about. One of them is FunJet. Hopefully you've heard me talk about it before, but FunJet is a fast, easy, and of course fun way to book your next vacation. And just having gotten off a vacation last month, I gotta tell you, it is definitely a great time to unplug. This year has been one heck of a year. Last year was one heck of a year. If you haven't had an opportunity to unplug, I would highly recommend you do it in some way, shape, or form, even if just for a day. But if you want more than a day off, and maybe you have some paid time off building up, FunJet Vacations tells you to look no further. They are a one-stop shop for all your vacation needs, and they're experts in the industry. They have all-inclusive resorts in Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. And that's not all. For a limited time, the Overwhelmed Brain listeners can use the promo code FUNJET75, that's the word FUNJET and the number 75, for $75 off your next vacation at Ryu Hotels and Resorts. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly resort or an adults-only getaway, there's a Ryu Hotel Resort for you. Go to funjet.com or contact your travel advisor and you'll be on your way in no time. Offer is only valid between October 15th and December of 2021. Funjet is pleasant and personal. Check them out. Funjet.com. Use the promo code FUNJET75. Get your $75 off and book between October 15th and December 2021. Restrictions apply. And for something to do while you're on the plane or in line at the store or just sitting at home doing nothing, or maybe when you have insomnia, why not pull out your mobile game, Best Fiends, and play some rounds? You know, my girlfriend's mom, she got up to level 200, and you can friend each other in the game. And my girlfriend always checks where her mom is, what level she's on. And when she finds out how far ahead her mom is, she immediately starts going crazy on the levels and trying to beat them to catch up to her. But her mom, I think she has more time than my girlfriend. So they go at it back and forth. But they love this game. And of course, I enjoy the game. I have it on my phone and I play it. You know, I was awake until like 2:30 a.m. last night. And I didn't know what to do. I'm thinking, I'm not going to read a book because my eyes are kind of blurry at night. And I don't know what else to do. So maybe I'll just play a game. Well, pretty soon, I was falling asleep. I put the covers over my head, pulled my phone in under the covers, and then I started playing a game. So this is something you can do if you can't sleep, or you can sleep fine and just want a fresh challenge waiting for you when you need a mental pick-me-up. With Best Fiends, you can play through an actual storyline complete with good guys, the fiends, and the not-so-good guys, the slugs. It's an action-packed adventure and a brain-boosting puzzle game all rolled into one. And I know it's brain boosting because my girlfriend says, be quiet for a second, I'm trying to figure this one out. And she does. And it comes with new content all the time, so you're never bored. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play and download Best Fiends free today. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. They have 100 million downloads for a reason. Again, check it out at the Apple App Store or Google Play today. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Welcome back. I'm going to read you an email I talked about in the last segment. I briefly mentioned it. This is from someone out there. This person wrote, sadly, I just found out about this podcast. I've spent the last 2 days listening nonstop. I love it. Oh, okay. That's good. I thought that was going somewhere else. I hope you could do an episode on how secure people seem to threaten insecure people. This is something I have struggled with since I was young. My own therapy has taught me that because I am confident and secure in who I am, I tend to be perceived as intimidating. Also, I work with disabled adults and children, and I find that I have this gift of making others feel safe and heard, resulting in me being respected, trusted, and liked by highly aggressive individuals. This then tends to create hostile coworkers and even a couple bosses. My initial instinct has me feeling bad for being who I am, and then reality kicks in, and apologizing for the only things I am good at will not happen. I would love, love, love to learn the why to this. Being self-aware, confident, and humble is a huge gift, but also a burden. Insecure people constantly try to, quote, get in the way of my success with relationships with a very vulnerable set of individuals. Living like this in everyday life is a breeze. I am surrounded by people who embrace this quality in myself, and anyone threatened either starts to love me or moves on. In the workplace, however, this is so stressful. I get talked to on a weekly basis because people think there has got to be some boundary-crossing reason that I am a favorite staff. On top of all the good and bad qualities I have, another one is I cannot break rules. I'm a rule follower to the point where it causes me extreme anxiety to think I could be doing something that's going to get me in trouble. Far from a perfectionist, though. I just constantly try to do me the best I can and ask questions so I'm making educated decisions that won't get me in trouble later. Is there a name for this that I can research on my own? Do you have a podcast on this? Anything would be helpful at this point. I'm sick of doing my best and having empathy and compassion and then getting talked to about it at work because I'm respected and liked by our clients. I shouldn't have to shut these qualities down just to please my insecure bosses. Help. Thank you a million. Okay, thanks for sharing that. Are you my girlfriend? I think this is exactly describing my girlfriend. She seems to have a abrasive exterior. She seems to have that. If you ask her, she would probably agree that it was abrasive, but she would also agree with almost everything that you said here. So she walks around feeling confident in herself, knowing what she knows and doing her job in a way she knows, and she has clients that love her. She doesn't have the bosses that you have, but there are some people that she bumps heads with here and there. But I can definitely relate to what you're saying here because of all the conversations I've had with my girlfriend and just her personality, including the rule follower. She's always been a rule follower as well. And when she met me, I think that has loosened up a bit. And that's for the good because she has become a looser person because of it. However, that doesn't mean, she wasn't a bad person before, but she has become a little bit more relaxed. And it sounds like that maybe that's a direction you want to go or you think you need to go. I'm not sure. But if you are a rule follower, you probably are a little bit, what's a good word? You're not the perfectionist. You follow the rules, which means you're probably doing what you're told. You drive the speed limit. You get to work always 5 minutes early and probably leave always 5 minutes late. You don't want to break the rules. I think let's just address this first. Rule following probably has an origin. So why do you think you follow the rules so diligently? I mean, I'm not putting you down for it at all. I'm just asking you, where did that come from? And you probably know. My dad or my mom or so-and-so, they required me to do certain things, or they would beat my butt, or whatever it is for you. Hopefully it's not that, but whatever it is for you probably has an origin. And let me ask you the next question is, if you aren't 100% following the rules, what will happen to you? This is even more important because we have the old belief, some old beliefs of what will happen to us, and then we have new beliefs of what will happen to us, and sometimes the old beliefs slip into the new beliefs. What we have to do is create a new belief. What will happen if I don't follow the rules? And it's important to get in touch with that. What will happen if I don't follow the rules? Well, Paul, it's going to be different every time. If I go over the speed limit, I'm going to get caught speeding. Well, we all know that we're not supposed to speed, so that's not necessarily a problem that you have, because this is one of those generalizations, right? We all know that speeding is illegal and we shouldn't do it. So if it's not that, what rules do you think you're following that are hard and fast, they cannot be broken? I wish you'd given me a few examples of which rules you follow, because we could tackle them and find out how it's a problem in your life. And I think that's where I'd go with this, is how is rule following a problem for you? If you know how it's a problem for you today, then that's how I would approach it. If you told me, well, I follow the rules and people look at me funny, they say things about me that I find disrespectful or makes me feel like an idiot, like, oh, okay, I probably shouldn't be too concerned about that, but I am, and they just make fun of me. So maybe if it's that, then my next question would be, how is it a problem that people make fun of you? How is it a problem that you might be embarrassed? How is it a problem that somebody might disrespect you? This all comes from the first segment. Asking yourself these questions, drilling into the problem or the challenge or the struggle that you're dealing with so that you understand why you do what you do and why you keep doing it. So you can explore that a little bit if you want, or get right into it, dive deep into it. But I'm going to instead give you another challenge. And that challenge is to break a minor rule. I mean, purposely do it, because I need you to find out the consequences of breaking rules. This is not good advice. It's not good advice for everyone. But for you, I have a feeling that you have probably a rule book that's a lot thicker than other people, and you are very stringent in following this rule book. So I want you to go through your rule book and figure out a rule that you think is minor enough to break, even though you know there are consequences to breaking it. Now, I don't want you to start speeding. I don't want you to go through red lights. It's nothing like that at all. This has to be minor enough to help you make the first baby step to be more relaxed in your life. This doesn't mean I want you to turn into some nonconformist or extremist or dissenter. I don't want you to be someone completely different. I want you to get used to the idea that you can start relaxing around certain things about yourself. Because I'm here to tell you, I follow most rules myself. Almost all of them. I follow the rules. But I never have to think about it. It's not something I go around thinking about. So I have a feeling that you are probably thinking less about rules and more about consequences. What's going to happen if I do this? What's going to happen if I call that person or don't call that person? What's going to happen if I pay my bill late? What's going to happen if I park in this spot longer than 15 minutes? There's all kinds of rules out there. But you probably focus on the consequences more, which means it probably keeps the idea of rule breaking alive inside of you. Or you may have someone today that requires you to follow rules, so that keeps it alive inside of you as well. But I'm willing to bet that there's more energy in the consequences of breaking the rules. And I really want you to get used to the idea of more of a worst case scenario of what is the worst that could happen. What is the worst that could happen if I break this rule? What if I don't do it this time? What if I choose not to? Or what if I choose to do it this time? Whatever the rule is for you. And just understand where the consequences lie, because if you're not a perfectionist, then you've set yourself up or restricted yourself to probably sabotage your happiness. That's where I would go with this, in fact, because you might have some program or belief way in the background inside of you that doesn't allow you to feel comfortable or be happy because of some sort of consequence for breaking the rules. So there's just, think about that. I don't have enough information to help you with that. All I know is that when I met my girlfriend, she was a rule follower as well. And what made her a little bit more relaxed, I mean, she still is, but what made her a little bit more relaxed today is probably my attitude. Because some of the things that'll come up, she'll say, you know, we should do this. And I'll say, I don't want to do that. I don't care. And she said, what? You don't care? What will they say? And I'll say, I don't care. I don't care what they'll say. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. Oh, I have a good example. We have friends that we help out a lot. But one time they were looking for help for something, and I didn't want to do it. I was like, no, I'm going to stay home. And she said, well, I really think I should do it. I'll feel guilty if I don't do it. And I said, well, I won't feel guilty. I'm honoring myself. I feel good. I feel good about honoring myself and my friends. If they're really friends, of course, I didn't really say this, but if they're friends, they're going to honor me honoring myself. That's how I feel about it. And she heard me say things like that over and over again, and she started doing stuff like that. And I think it changed her perception. It changed her idea of consequences, and it made her realize that it was okay to honor yourself. It was okay to give yourself the gift of something that you don't want to do. It's okay to do that. So if that helps you at all, that's how I think my girlfriend has done this. I might have to talk to her about this a little bit more, but that's my take on it. So there's the rule stuff. Let's get into the main question that you have, which is, I guess, feeling comfortable in your confidence. So again, this is something my girlfriend also has to deal with, is that she can seem to come across as intimidating. Some people have called her intimidating, abrasive. Some people have called her that, including myself. Some people have called her aggressive, but I've known her for so many years that I've come to learn that it's really not aggression. It's really not her trying to intimidate. It's really none of that, because her intentions are always pure. As far as I know, they're always pure. They're always true. And she's always trying to help. And she has a lot of compassion and a lot of empathy. And we talk about this every now and then, about how she comes across, and it just doesn't make people feel very comfortable sometimes. And this is what I told her. This is my perception from when I first started getting to know her until today. My perception is that when she talks, it's not about the other person, it's about herself. This is what I've gotten from her, is that when she's speaking with conviction, it sounds as if she's sometimes throwing it in your face. Well, this is what I'm doing, and this is what I mean, and this is how it is, and this is correct. But it's not something that she's purposely throwing in your face for the intent to make you feel bad or the intent to offend you. It's just something she knows well. The challenge is that most people don't have that same level of energy. And this is the only way I can think of to describe it, is that she comes across with this very forward energy. It is very, it's not in your face, it's just, it's there. And she means no ill will, she means no harmful intent, but there is an energy in how she speaks her mind or speaks about something with somebody else. And those who know her well, they love it. They love the way she is. They love her personality. Those who don't know her as well, including coworkers or clients, or they're just getting to know her or whatever, she might come across as more intimidating or more aggressive or abrasive. And because of that, they're going to have opinions about it. So I don't think I've told you anything you don't know yet, but I think you probably resonate with this. So we talked some more about this, and she has actually worked on her energy level when it comes to this. And it's not the right word. The best way I can describe how she comes across is in her inflection. Like, you listen to me and you hear an inflection in my voice. Hey, how you doing? My voice is rising high and going low. And when I'm talking about something exciting, my voice raises. And when I'm talking about something sad, my voice gets lower, and I'm connected to my emotions at a deep level, and it just comes out. I'm not saying you aren't or she isn't, but I allow all these emotions to come through my voice. That took practice, but I do that now naturally. Her, on the other hand, I don't hear that as much. In fact, many people who don't know her might not hear it enough or at all. Other people might hear just that assertive, aggressive, however they interpret it, sounding inflection. Because there's a difference between saying, hey, how are you? And, hey, how are you? There's a big difference there. Hey, how are you? That feels good. It feels like you're relating to the other person. The other person feels welcome and safe in your presence, at least as far as I know when I talk that way. But when my girlfriend or maybe you say, hey, how are you? It might come across as, hey, how are you? There's an energy behind it. There's an inflection behind it. And if other people aren't used to you or don't know you well, they might take that wrong. And I could be way off with this. I have no idea how you come across, but I'm just assuming that you might be like her. So when that happens, they're experiencing you in a way that might sound assertive or aggressive or intimidating to them. Because of the energy behind it, because of the inflection in their voice, and maybe the speed at which you talk, or whatever. I do know that when you inflect, you are revealing more of yourself. When you inflect, when you have those highs and lows, when you have faster and slower speech patterns, you know, this is what I've learned over the years, my experience and study with communication and speech. When people can hear the emotion in your voice, they're more likely to feel safe around you. When people can't hear it or they can't interpret it, they have no idea what to think. They have to guess. They have to interpret. Well, she said hello and she said how are you, but it sounded like she was still angry at me from the last time we talked. So I don't know how to take it. That might be where you are. I don't know. But that is something to think about. And I'm not saying you have to change. I'm not saying you have to change who you are. But I am saying that it could be one of the reasons people become intimidated when you talk to them or when you're just being yourself. This could be something you work on or not. I'm not saying that you have to. But I am saying if you want the reason, that could be helpful. That could be it. That seems to be the reason for me. In my relationship, when my girlfriend comes across as assertive or harsh, I have to keep checking in with myself to make sure that I'm not taking it personally, that I'm not offended or hurt by what she said, and I'm making it sound worse than it is. It's not bad at all. It's not like that at all. I know her well. It doesn't come across that way. But every now and then, if we have a conversation and I'm triggered by something or it's a hot topic and she has that inflection and she's more quick and more assertive and she knows what she knows and she's just telling me in a way that she's confident in it, I might take it the wrong way. I might become emotionally triggered by it. And it's not something that she's doing on purpose. It's just, this is how she comes across. Because she's probably one of the sweetest, most compassionate people I know. And yet, here is this, what some people might call a bulldog, coming out, and they don't even realize that it's not really a bulldog inside. It's not even her trying to be intimidating or abrasive or whatever. It's just the way she's learned to communicate, and she feels comfortable talking this way. And I would never ask her, hey, honey, start inflecting more. I would never say that at all because I don't want her to change and I don't want her to conform to what I'm used to or what I think would be helpful to the world. Now, we have talked about how she can improve communication with people. And I think she might have figured this out herself. She said, you know, when I work with men especially, this is a common problem with women and men in the workplace, some men and some women, is that when they come across as assertive or confident, knowing what they're doing or having good leadership skills, especially in their own life, they're a good leader of themselves, men can become intimidated by that for various reasons, but mainly because a lot of men aren't used to women having that more powerful feeling. And so they get uncomfortable and they don't know how to deal with it. And they call them the B word and they, you know, say things about them and gossip about them. And it's unfortunate, but this still happens. This definitely still happens. My girlfriend still deals with this. You know, she knows a lot. And some guy on the phone will say, I need to talk to the specialist. And she'll say, I am the specialist. And he gets surprised because it's a woman. But she has to deal with that. That's the sexism that goes on. So she deals with that well, but one of the things that she has learned is that when she's working with people that are intimidated by her, typically men, she reluctantly strokes their ego. She said, when I started doing that, I suddenly felt more welcomed, I suddenly felt more accepted, and it really makes me mad. She said, it makes me so mad that I have to stroke someone's ego in order to feel like a part of the team. I shouldn't have to stroke anyone's ego. I just want to do my job and leave. I just want to have conversations and, you know, just get things done. But I have to stroke your ego now. I have to do something I don't want to do. But she said it made a difference. She said, this is what made all the difference. And I said, that's a softener. That helps people get to know you. It helps them get past the interpretation that they're making of your personality. It helps them get past any perception they have of you. Because what you're doing is complimenting them, which comes from inside of you instead of outside, if that makes any sense. Meaning, so far, they've seen the outside of you. They've seen the expressions, the external stuff, your body language. And when they have interactions with you, it's all outside stuff. Unless you come from the inside and give them a compliment, stroke their ego, and make them feel good about themselves, allowing them to feel safe or safer around you. This is what happens when you stroke someone's ego. Typically, they'll feel safer around you. You often see this as a manipulation in sales. Somebody with not so honest intentions will stroke your ego to try to make a sale from you. But in general, if you have a coworker and you say, hey, you know, thank you so much for that report. You got it in 2 days ahead of time, and I went through it, and it's nearly flawless. I am very grateful that you did that. Thank you again. It saved my butt. Or whatever compliment you have. When she stroked their ego, they showed up differently and they felt more comfortable. They felt accepted as well. I'm making some assumptions here, but I'm assuming they felt accepted. They probably felt safer. They probably finally saw past that rough exterior or their interpretation of how she presented herself and saw the soft, gooey center inside that showed that she has heart, that she can emotionally connect with people, that she notices things about people. It's not all about her. And I'm not saying it is. I'm saying that sometimes people will see it that way, where you might just want to get the job done and you're not there to necessarily have friendly chit-chat. And that's how she comes across a lot as well. So people don't get to see that gooey center. They don't get to experience that emotional connection. And because they don't hear her inflection, because she doesn't talk that way typically, depends on the circumstance and the people, other people may not see the person that's really inside. And that may be the whole issue, is that the way you come across, people can't see what's inside. And as you get to know people, they get to know you and they realize, wow, this is a great person. Compassionate, generous, supportive, kind, and caring. All of the wonderful stuff. This is somebody I want to keep in my life. This is great. But maybe you don't show that to everyone. Maybe it doesn't even occur to you. And maybe it's not even on purpose. Maybe it's just the way you are. Your personality is there. And you're a mixed bag of all the good stuff. And some of the stuff has people scratching their head wondering who you are. That's my guess. I guess that's what's happening with you. I think that's the why that you're asking about. Why is this? I think that's the why. There are some people that are very comfortable, wear their heart on their sleeve, and everyone knows what they're thinking and feeling because they just put it out there and they feel very good. I think I'm along that lines. I keep some things private and I don't really mind talking about anything. Sure, you could hear all about my personal life. Sure, you can catch me when I'm very vulnerable. But some people don't feel comfortable being that way. It's not who they are. And it's not even about comfort. It's just how they've grown up, how they've lived their life. So that could be you too. It's a fascinating topic. I'd love to keep talking about it, but we're going to close the show shortly. So thank you for writing. I hope this was valuable to you. Thanks for tuning into another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We'll be right back with some more thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to remind you to head over to funjet.com and use the promo code FUNJET75 to get $75 off your next FunJet vacation to Ryu Hotels and Resorts. Man, we all need a vacation. And I want to remind you of the fun game Best Fiends. Friends without the R, Best Fiends. Head over to Apple App Store or Google Play and download it for free today. And I want to thank the patrons of the show. These are the financial backers. I read names every week because I am so grateful for their support. I am so grateful for your support. If you're a patron or a donor, thank you. The following patrons: Kathleen, Wanda, Anita, Chris, Victoria, Tracy, John, Anne-Marie, Eric, Meg, Christy. Thank you all. Also, Brendan for his donation. Thank you so much, Brendan. I am grateful for you. Thank you, everyone that has contributed to the show. It keeps everything paid and makes me feel so good knowing that you value the show that much to give back. And if you are listening and you want to give back because you value the show, head over to moretob.com and you can choose to give a single donation or monthly. And if you're a monthly contributor, you'll become a patron in the patron site, which you'll get private episodes, worksheets, and a video archive. You can check it all out at moretob.com. I also want to mention the Love and Abuse podcast. If you have a difficult relationship in your life and you want to pinpoint the problem areas, usually with control, manipulation, and emotional abuse, head over to loveandabuse.com, my other podcast. You'll find the podcast and you'll also find the Mean Workbook that will help you assess your relationship. Loveandabuse.com. And if you figure out that you're one of those difficult people and maybe somebody's even called you emotionally abusive, head over to healedbeing.com. I have a program for you that is going to be life-changing. Healedbeing.com for the emotionally abusive person that wants to change. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. For my final words, there was something in that email that I forgot to get to. It was the last one I just read. It was when she said that she threatens insecure people. I think it might be a mistake to call other people insecure because they find you a threat. I think it's just difficult, like I was saying, to interpret exactly who you are. In fact, this is what I want you to do. I want you to watch how other people communicate with each other. I really want you to pay attention to that and see if you can figure out why some people are more receptive to other people than you. That is your homework. I want you to watch how other people communicate. You're in the office, you're at the grocery store, wherever. When two people talk to each other, how do they approach each other? And definitely listen for inflections. That's one part of it. Also look at body language. Is their body language inviting? Is it welcoming? You may not be a body language expert, and if you're not, then all you have to do is ask yourself, if I was around this person, would I feel comfortable? Because body language is one of those highly imperceptible things that might be difficult for you to read, but you can feel it. Would I feel comfortable around a person that was talking to me in that way and moving in that way, using their hands in that way, looking at me that way? There's all kinds of things that you can get from someone when you really observe. It's easier for somebody like me because when I was growing up, I had to observe everything. I was in a toxic home with an alcoholic, and I watched body language, and I listened to inflection, and I listened and watched everything like a hawk. I was very observant, so that really helped hone my skills at a young age. It also made me highly adaptable, and I didn't even know who I was for many years, and I had to recreate or create myself later on so that I didn't stay this adaptable chameleon that I was for so long. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, I want you to observe people, listen to people, watch how they interact. You are not part of the interaction. I don't want you to be part of it and then observe them. I want you to observe from afar, meaning they don't know you're watching. Because once you're part of something, then your subconscious kicks in and you're doing things that are hard to observe, because that's going to help you hone your skills. After you've done some observations, then get into conversations with people. And you may even want to mimic a little bit, not because I want you to change, but because I want you to gauge their reception of how you're coming across. Again, this isn't to change you, it's to help you understand. And you may also want to experiment with a softener. I like to call them softeners. I'll use softeners when I have bad news about something, or when I have to tell somebody something that they may not want to hear, or I may not want to say because it's scary to say. I'm afraid of how they'll respond. So I'll use a softener. A softener might be, hey, I really liked your talk. I really liked that presentation. Thank you so much for that talk. And I might even ask them a question. How long did it take you to prepare that? That shows that you're genuinely interested. I know it's a little deceptive. What are you doing? You're trying to manipulate them? No. This is an experiment. This is for you to try to help you understand how people communicate and how people interpret communication, how people respond to you and respond to others. So you open up maybe with a softener. Hey, thanks for ordering lunch for everyone. That was very nice of you. That was delicious. Oh, you're welcome. And then just have a conversation. This isn't even about bad news, but the softener helps to connect at the emotional level. This is where the softener comes into play. So you might want to open with a softener that helps you connect with them emotionally. That way, it helps let their guard down. That way, anything you say from that point on, they'll be a little bit more receptive to. That's what I mean by softener. It's not even an ego stroke. You don't even have to do an ego stroke. You could just ask, what'd you do over the weekend? You could just ask a question to show curiosity in them. If somebody thinks you have some interest in their life whatsoever, they're more likely to want to act vulnerable around you or connect with you at an emotional level, and they're also more likely to feel safer around you. So that's my homework for you. Observe, communicate, use the softener, and maybe if you want, mimic a little bit. So if you see somebody talking and they're talking a little bit slowly and they're using inflections, you could try it. You don't have to, but you could try it just to see the reception. But don't change you. Now, saying that, you may have to change some things or one thing about you so that people who don't know you can get to know you because you are showing up a little bit differently on the first or second or third time, just so they can get past whatever exterior they are perceiving. Remember, we're either forward and very external and could be seen as assertive or even aggressive. But if we allow something from the inside, that gooey center, to come out, then somebody who may not see that gets to see it and feel it and experience it. And maybe from that point on, it'll be a better conversation and even a better relationship. This is a great topic, so thank you for asking it. I hope it helps. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for writing again. And thank you for listening to the show. You've made it this far. I'm just so glad that you're on this path. Whatever path you're on, I think it's a path of forward momentum. I think it's a path of progression. And no matter what, just keep an open mind, because this is how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.